Platekusk, podcasten om norske DJs.
Looks like we're on.
I'm ready.
All right, right.
Kjempebra.
Kjempebra. All right. Ja, velkommen da til Platekusk. Det litt lyd I bakgrunnen her, fordi vi direkte inne fra Old Irish Pub på Majorstua, hvor de har drivet noe viktig I bakgrunnen. Det bartenderkurs I bakgrunnen her, og så det da pub I kjelleren. Vi sitter oppe, og min engelsk ikke like ræva som din norsk. So let's do this in English, Vangelos.
Yep. This is
Yeah, because you turn into a completely different man when you speak Norwegian.
Yeah, I sound retarded. Jeg kan snakke litt norsk, men ikke så bra.
Flink.
Yeah, see? Yeah. I sound like I'm from a kindergarten.
Yeah, that's right. It's only your mind that's from kindergarten, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that as well. So, the reason why your Norwegian is quite bad is that you're not from here, of course. You're from Greece.
Yep.
And before we get into, like, who you are and stuff, I will just do some rapid fire.
All
right. Some rapid fire questions, this or that.
Yes.
Just to get it going. Club or festival?
Club.
Vinyl or CDJs?
Vinyl.
Big name headliner DJs or undiscovered local talent when you go see shows yourself?
I would say undiscovered talent.
Yeah. And then some music ones. Prince or Michael Jackson?
Oh, man. That's a very hard one. I would say Michael Jackson because of the dance.
Oh, going to get into that as well. Beyonce or Rihanna?
Beyonce.
Calvin Harris or Tiesto?
Calvin Harris.
Yeah, I think we're in line. Except I would probably go Prince over Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
But that is solely because of the depth of the catalog, I think. And that Michael Jackson has even more hits that get kind of worn out in some way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, at least for me. But yeah, you're from Skiathos in Greece. Small island, some of the scenes from Mamma Mia was filmed there.
Yep.
I read on Wikipedia 6,600 people living there. 560,000 people visit every year.
Yeah.
So how is that like coming from this small place? And you've been in like the entertainment industry your whole life because your family had a nightclub.
Yeah.
Back from the 70s.
Yeah, my stepfather opened a nightclub in, I think it was 1976 or 1978. I wasn't even born.
On the island?
On the island, yeah. It used to be an oil factory, olive oil. And he turned it into a nightclub. And it was the most successful nightclub in the island. My mother later on married him. And in the 80s, I would say that place thrived big time. And they also had a restaurant, you know, in front of the beach, all that. Very, I would say, high class. People were going to the club and to the restaurant. I think also because my mother was American, she brought something new.
Yeah.
You know, it was the American in the Greek island. You know, back then it was, you know, it was very different, the Greek islands back then. I think it's that. And
It was 76. So...
Either 76 or 78 when he...
And you were born in...
I was born in 1985.
85,
So way later, and I met, because this was my stepfather, so I met him like 4 years later.
Oh.
I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah, see.
And so my mom, that was my mom's second husband. And,
all right.
And she got with him pretty young.
Yeah.
So, and
because it's one of the most famous guitar players in Norway, and probably the most famous also singer of all time, Lillebjørn Nilsen died a couple of years ago, and his daughter Siri. That when she was young, she was a baby. She slept in her father's guitar case. I can imagine it was the same thing because you probably had to go to work with your mom.
Yeah, she used to take us, you know, to the restaurant every day. And I remember, like, I would help sometimes. She'd make me do stuff, you know, keep me busy. And like in that restaurant, it was so popular. She even did beach parties.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I guess that's when I started seeing. Loud music and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I would say then, even though I do remember times as a kid, I'm in a discotheque asleep. So that, it is, you know, it's one that it's very typical in Greece, that.
Yeah.
And of course, growing up, you always hear about Bourjoi. Bourjoi was the nightclub.
Okay. Yeah.
And Bourjoi is actually it's a dog breed.
Oh yeah, it's it comes
So you know, you grew up hearing about Bourjoi and all that, and I always heard stories from friends of my mom's and all this stuff. And later on, when I grew up, my mom will even take me and my sister there as kids, you know, like early hours and stuff. And we would, you know, she'll give us like a little Coke and we drink Coca-Cola and, you know, hear the music and all that.
Turn into the mascots for
I was fucking, I don't know, 11 to 12 or something. But, yeah, so.
Cool.
So, but it's also that lifestyle in Greece, how it is.
Yeah.
It's very relaxed, open. Like when you go to a nightclub with your parents, it's not an issue. Even today, it's not an issue.
Yeah.
So imagine back then. Back then, it was very free.
Yeah, it was quite loose, yeah. And even, I can imagine, like in Norway, we go to work and then we work for like 7 or 8 hours.
Mm.
And then it's almost frowned upon to like answer a text from someone or whatever in some occupations at least. But I guess in Greece, you have much longer hours, but but you are much more social.
People go out to socialize, not to get hammered or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more to see each other because all day they're working or whatever, stressed. Greece don't like the stress, especially people from islands.
Oh.
We're very stressful people, but we don't like it to stress. Yeah. So we try our best not to. And I guess I got affected from that. But like, for example, my mom's godfather, he had one of the most popular nightclubs in America, in Baltimore.
In Baltimore?
America, yeah.
Wow.
He is Greek, but he had a club over there.
I'm going to get back to the U.S.
So
afterwards.
It was always around.
Yeah, because you lived in the U.S. at one point as well.
Yeah.
Let's get back to that. But how was that in school, though? Because I can imagine a lot of kids, their father is an accountant and their mother is working at a supermarket, you know?
Yeah.
Your family is in the service industry with the restaurants and the nightclubs. It's something different.
Yeah. That was it was normal.
Yeah.
It was all good. It was all fun. Didn't affect.
Are you trained as a chef?
I did do the education.
Okay.
I did it when I was young. Basically, my mother basically made me do that because she knew I was really into DJing and all this like entertainment. I was into dancing as well. And, you know, she's like, you know, you have to have an education on something. And she used to teach me how to cook when I was young.
Yeah.
And she believed I was a very good cook. So she said, you should go towards that way. So I did it, you know. At that time as a teenager, I'm like, all right, I'll just do it, you know, so I can, you know, she doesn't bother me, you know. Like,
oh, yeah.
That type of thing. But it came out to the most useful education I did. Because every time when I left from Skiathos and I had to start all over in England or here in Norway, the first jobs that I got was a chef.
Yeah.
And that's how I got the connections later on to nightclubs.
Oh,
so,
I see.
So DJing was always at the back of my head.
Mm. When did you start? What?
So DJing, like the interest came when I was 13. But I didn't, you know, back then you didn't have a laptop with a controller. Back then you had to actually have the access to the machines. So back then it was only the rich kids who had that, you know, or you know, the ones with the connections. So like my cousin, he managed to get like a Technics back then. So I would try to learn from him, or I would just try my best to learn from anyone who had the machines, and you know, like school parties, all these old things. When I would go to my mom's nightclub, when it was cleaning and all that, I would go to the DJ booth.
Yeah.
There's all this like little stuff, but I never had the prop like myself to have it to sit and practice.
What kind of equipment did they have at the club though?
It was Pioneers, I remember. It was the Pioneer, the one that looped. Was it 500? Was it called?
I think it was the 500. It was
the CDJ.
The CDJ.
So. So yeah, I had my cousin who was teaching me how to put a vinyl in a Technics, and then So, but then I would say that the opportunity came when I was around 16, 17, and it was straight to a nightclub basically.
Oh yeah.
because that summer in 2002, I was, you know, the typical, you know, summer flings with the chicks, you know, it was tourist. I fell in love back then. I thought it was with some Swedish girl, way older than me. And she told me to dance for her on the bar because I was a show off. I used to break dance and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was not one of those. So she's like, dance for me on the bar. And so I get on a...
Be my monkey now.
Yeah. So me, I get up on the bar. I take off my shirt.
Of course.
And all of a sudden, the whole nightclub's looking at me. And the manager comes with a champagne glass and a champagne. And he gives it to me. Huh. And he's like, where are you tomorrow? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, like, he's like, be here tomorrow at 1.
Oh, brilliant.
And... So that's how basically the dancing started all of a sudden. As I started dancing as a go-go dancer, entertainer, for pocket money or for fucking free drinks, you know, because I was 16, 17. And to me, this was just all exciting, you know.
Cool.
And from there, people started paying attention to me. And later on, they find out whose son I am.
Ah, yeah.
So, of course, a guy goes to my mom and says, oh, I heard a... about your son, whatever. And I heard he likes DJing. My mom's like, yeah, he's really into this stuff. And so he said, if you want, you tell him to come over to my club and, you know, he could play early or whatever. And that was basically the first time I ever played in a nightclub with the CDJs. And I was really shit back then.
Yeah, but, of course,
you
know, you were.
And I was learning from this guy, the main DJ. And then when I wasn't DJing, he put me in the lights.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was very common back then.
You feel the music,
yes,
though.
Yes, and that taught me a lot.
Of course,
and from being on the lights, watching him, that... Because, you know, when you start DJing, you only think about mixing, right?
Yeah.
Or showing off or showing, you know, especially that age. But I started realizing what he's doing over time. Like, he was reading the crowd. And over the years, that helped a lot in other places that I worked. For a long time, they had me as an entertainer, you know, the clubs. Dance or whatever, and they'll put me in the lights. And if I was lucky, they'll let me play for an hour. So it was that type of thing. That's why DJing was for a couple years. It was like a second thing. It was like a winter thing. It was like a, you know, an hour thing, you know. And I got to show myself through the dancing, you know, performing and all that stuff.
All right.
Because it was common clubs back then to have that. But also it was because...
What was it, like a cage and stuff?
Not a cage, but it was like a stage,
like stage, a little elevated.
In front of the booth and
podium,
all that stuff. I was full on, you know, like, I would never do that now. I would never do this.
No one would pay for that.
It was just ridiculous, like how I did it for like very little money too. But it was so exciting, and I knew I always wanted to be in the entertainment business, in the night business. And every time I got my chance, I will try to show my skill in the booth. It's just in the booth that time, because of the whole fucking light thing, and it felt like jail. Because you were there from like 10 o'clock and you'd be till the end, till 6, 7 in the morning. As a dancer, I would go around 12. Oh. And I could finish at 4. Oh, so for a long time, unfortunately, especially that age, I was thinking with my penis.
One more time.
For a long time, I was thinking with my penis. I was caring about leaving a bit earlier with some chick. That's why it was for a long time I was just focused on the dancing.
It makes sense, though, because you get like the attention when it's on the podium.
Yeah, in that age, too. 17, 18, 19.
At that time, the DJ booth was like in the back and like not clean at all.
And then I would just jump in a booth whenever I wanted and play some lights and do this bullshit.
Feel like the king of the world.
For that age. At that age, I felt it was pretty cool. But then I would say after 20, when I hit 20, I was taking things more serious.
Yeah.
It's right after I did national service, after I did Army. I think that was really good for me, the Army. It makes you think. You have the pause. It's also a good slap in the face and make you realize you're not hot shit. It's a lot of this stuff. And also traveling from Greece to England and starting over in England, that was a good slap in the face too. It got me to reality because no one knows who you are. You're not Elsie's son anymore. You're not the club owner's son those connections.
I think it's quite cool that your mom and stepdad didn't open the door though. You got noticed without
Without them, yeah, like opening my the mom door. Was very strict with that. She didn't want, cool. Even when one of my bosses, when he rented the nightclub for my mom when I was like young, he told her, "Hey, I'll probably have your son working for us," and she told him, "Make him work."
Yeah.
And dude, he would make me clean toilets, everything. So even though I did the dancing and the DJ and all that, they made sure I was humble. Don't make me paint fucking walls.
Yeah.
They had me working hard. And if I did it right, then they'll let me, I'll get rewarded with what I like to do. So it was a good balance because especially with my personality then, I was a…
Yeah, it is.
I was a show off, so I was a dick. So it was good they did it. I feel like that, you know, it kept me humble.
How many people turn into DJs because they were dicks, do you think?
I would say 90%. Well, but
and out of the 90%, like 70% never got rid of the dick.
Yeah. Still DJ dick. Some today are holy shit.
Oh. We were speaking about Carl Cox sitting downstairs eating brilliant gyros.
Yes.
And he is everyone you hear talking about Carl. Yeah. When you see his sets like filmed in Ibiza or whatever, and he's doing something on the beach, and people are giving ice creams and stuff during the DJ set because he's always so nice and always smiling and happy about people. And so at one big festival when he came on the stage and was surfaced. The Blessed Madonna was playing before him.
Oh, dear.
And he wasn't sitting in the back, like waiting, and the lights were going down and stuff. He was walking out on stage to shake her hand and say, "Hello, like, here I am."
To me, that shows humble.
Yeah.
That means humble, cool guy. I truly believe he went probably through hell to get where he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Guaranteed.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's a good attitude. I like that attitude.
I totally agree. But then you moved from Greece to the UK, or did you come to Norway then? First
I went to UK.
Okay.
And, because I knew a girl from Norway, from meeting her in Greece in the summers, like many years later, you know, we still spoke to each other. And she was in Singapore. And then she moved to Oslo, and she's like, "Hey, you know, I'm in Oslo and you're in London. Why don't you like come by for a visit?"
Cool. Let's rewind though. Let's go back to the UK.
Yeah,
To the UK.
UK was it was hard.
So what brought you to the UK in the first place?
Oh, another lady.
Your DJ name is Player, I can imagine.
Yeah, it was a girl and
British girl though.
Yeah, British, from Manchester. So yeah, we lived there and then, of course, later on, we broke up a year later, was it? Something like that. And I lived in London, outside London.
But did you work in restaurants in the UK?
Everywhere.
Well? Okay,
my first job in the UK, actually, was in Sainsbury's. Do you know Sainsbury's?
Supermarket?
I was there for 2 weeks. I managed 2 weeks. I went crazy. I couldn't take it anymore.
The shortest time I ever had a job. I was a sub for the sub, cycling with the newspapers.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh. And it was up until Christmas, and the main guy got sick and his substitute got sick. So I got the route. And I, of course, dumped all the newspapers just around the corner.
Yeah. Oh.
Because I was an idiot as well. But that guy is probably he's probably a heart surgeon or something. And I'm sitting here speaking to you like a moron.
Yeah. Talk about 90% of the DJs are dicks.
Yeah. I used to be one of them myself. But then, so you went to the UK and that humbled you regarding the music and DJing as well because…
Big time. Yeah. Because I had to meet agents. It was a lot of weird shit. And I was still a dancer at that time as well. I've been in video clips. I was dancing in hip-hop groups, all that stuff. But it was still very hard. And to get in a booth and all that, it was… You know, they try to make you work for free. Because they don't know you. It was a lot of that crap. But that was a good reality check, though. And every time I went back to Greece in the summers, you know, in the summer, I would feel like a king and then go back to UK. It's like, oh, back to this, you know. Mm. But it was good, though. It taught me a lot of things.
What kind of music did you play in the UK, though? And when was this?
This was in 2000. 2006, 2007.
Yeah. Peak electro house.
It was that. Yeah. But I was, again, because I was a DJ assistant for so long, and I was so used to playing hip hop.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of hip hop. I started with hip hop, I would say, and it was a lot of house and all that. But in a club, they wanted you to play R&B,
urban,
and all this stuff. My style, I would say that my when I started having a real style, I would say that was in 2008. It was like in between the UK and Norway, and then in the summer. I feel like that was when I was starting to figure out this is what I want to play. Like, and it was more electro house. I really liked French electro. I was a big fan of Miss Kitten. Do you remember Miss Kitten?
No.
I bought an album for her in 2001. And I really liked that style. And whenever I tried to play that in clubs from 2001 till then, I will get in trouble because it was like very techno, very dark, I would say, not commercial. And that was my biggest argument with most of the nightclub owners. I wanted to do my own thing. I didn't want to play the... I wasn't paying attention to the business. I was keep thinking of myself playing.
It's a common mistake, I guess.
Yeah. So that's again, that's why I needed to go to UK and all this, to realize that it's not about me, it's about the people. Yeah, that opened my eyes. Norway opened my eyes a lot. Because when I came to Norway after UK, a lot of clubs, you couldn't play hip hop. I remember a lot of popular clubs here. Yeah. You weren't allowed to play hip hop. 2008, 2009.
I think the hip hop wave in Norway hit so hard, and with the reggaeton and everything, that it totally took over. And then some of the rooms got.
They want to avoid.
Some of the rooms got a bit messy because you were attracting a lot of people that usually didn't go out, and a lot of those guys, especially, was only out to like grab the girls.
Yeah.
So security had these huge problems. Yeah. And then, of course, the solution is to read the room and give them what they want in like small increments.
Mm.
But management didn't understand that, so they like banned it instead.
Because of that, I had to open up my ears for other type of music. Then I started being a bit more open with the commercial and the pop music, not so much with the hip hop or the underground house and all this. I had to get away from that. I still did it, but I just didn't do that extreme anymore. Then I was like, okay, let's, because I needed money too. So I had, and because of that, that opened my ears even more. And I, all of a sudden, I started playing rock music and I had no problem with it. You know, it's like, it was a good education for me. Actually, because here in Norway, they're more into rock. Back then, I feel like it was
sing-alongs and like familiar stuff.
And that helped me a lot with the commercial music. Because in Greece, it was house. That's all I knew in Greece. House, trance, club. You know, the clubs were open until 7, 8 in the morning. This is what we played. That's what it was. In UK, it was a bit more commercial, you know, like that pub type of music. And then in Norway, kind of the same, I feel.
In Norway, we have... not that many nightclubs per se. We have like discos and party bars.
Exactly, like a dancing bars. And that helped me a lot. Again, you know, there wasn't lights to play anymore.
Oh.
You know, it wasn't this other stuff. Then I had to learn to do things differently. I couldn't be half naked dancing behind the booth or doing this stuff anymore. I had to actually focus on strictly the DJing and not me acting like a clown or all these little things. So it helped. It helped a lot. And I feel like all that combination with my old combination created something better, a better version of me.
And you, of course, were growing up as well. That's
it is the age. It is the age. I actually, after 2000, like when I came to Norway, first of all, I started working in a dancing school as well. I realized there's no money.
As an instructor?
Yeah, well, I was trying to be an instructor there, but they kept doing that whole, oh, you don't speak Norwegian, you know, that kind of crap.
Oh, yeah.
But he was taking advantage of me. He was paying me very shit. You know, it was all this bullshit. But again, I didn't know the place. I was here for what? A month. And, you know, so it was like a... So that's why I was so lucky I had the cooking. You know?
Yeah.
It was all this...
Something you can fall back on, yeah.
Yeah.
So your mom was right, though.
big time. And
they usually are, the moms.
Always right. So I always tried to, you know... And then through that cooking, the owner of that restaurant had a bar.
Ah.
He had a bar.
Where was
and
this?
This was in Grunaluka.
Grunaluka, okay, yes.
So he heard I was a DJ. He heard about it. So he comes over and that was like a rock bar or whatever. And he's like, you know, I want to have a DJ there. I want to put you there. He had some hipster guys playing there or whatever. So I go there and, you know, he saw that I can hook up a mixer and stuff like that. Because the people who was there, they didn't even know how to do that stuff. And because I had certain ideas and things from my past, I knew very well how to get in there. And it became a very popular place.
Cool.
It was called Cadiz. It was very popular from, I would say, 2009. I was there until 2012. It was a very popular, there's a lot of Swedish back then.
Yeah,
there was
because
a lot
then,
of Swedes who were going
yeah,
there.
Then they were making a lot more money working in Norway and
yes,
Sweden. Yeah.
And it was a Swedish managers. It was, everyone was Swedish back then.
Sure.
So, and there I, again, there I feel like I created a very good style of mine. Then I combined everything I knew.
But how was it to get into the Norwegian DJ scene as a foreigner coming from the
it
outside?
Was hard.
I can imagine.
It was not easy. It was not hard. It was not easy. It was hard because, like, I remember back then I was still playing with CDs and I would have to carry those suitcases and wait until the first train at 7 in the morning after the and Yerban Turgut with a bunch of crackheads so I can go home and I would probably play and I would probably play for free. You know, because they didn't know me and they're like, oh, you're going to come and play for free for two times and then we'll see.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of that. It worked.
And if
like,
you,
I
if
made
you,
it. But
and
it
if
was,
you rock the room like hell, it's like, I'm not really sure yet.
That what, it was like, it was a lot of this, you know, a lot of advantage, taking advantage. But I eventually met the right people and then I got more info. I feel like when I started meeting Norwegians, that's when it got better for me.
Okay.
Because when I was just hanging around with Swedish or, you know, foreigners, I feel like they didn't know a lot of stuff themselves. You know?
It depends.
I didn't get the info.
I think that at that time, a lot of the nightclub and bar industry was kind of tainted.
It's a closed circle.
Yeah,
right?
Closed circle, yeah. And it was tainted by this idea that this is easy to sell the drinks and just shave off money everywhere you can, less security, pay the DJ less. Just play some fucking music, you know, and
yeah, they would offer cash back then. I remember, like ridiculous salary or free. There was one place I played that was popular. That was my first year in Norway. Yahtzee.
Yahtzee. Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So I went there, and I had to go there in the afternoon. I remember.
Okay.
Like this kind of like 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and they were cleaning or fixing their bar, so I had to play there for like an hour or two so they can hear my style. Whatever.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, okay, come tonight, and that's. That's how
they haven't booked the DJ for the night, and you have to come in and try.
I don't remember if it was a. I just remember I played there on a Sunday. It was a Sunday, or it was like a. It was a weekday. It was not a. It was not a weekend.
Strange.
So. Yeah, it was a good experience. Again, that's where I actually fucked up the first time.
You fucked up.
Well, I played a lot of hip hop, and I didn't know that. I didn't know hip hop was not allowed. No one told me this, you know.
Oh,
no. When I did the tryout, I played like some Kanye West, whatever. But I guess they didn't think I will do that all night.
Oh yeah.
So, and the thing is, like when I played, it was a bunch of Americans in the club. So I'm like, all right, it's Americans. All right, I'm gonna play some hip hop, R&B, you know, some Shakira, you know, some Latino, and all this. And it worked. I did have a full house. But the manager comes up to me. He's like, man, you played a lot of hip hop. I'm like, yeah. You know, I was like smiling. Yeah, I did. He's like, yeah, that's we don't normally play that here. I was like, oh, shit. I didn't know that. I still remain friends with that one, you know. But, you know, I didn't know.
Yeah, but then again, if you don't get the information, how the fuck can
I
you
never
know?
Got the info. Yeah. And I only went there once. The one day I went there, I asked, can I play here?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, come over that day and try out. You know, so it wasn't, I didn't really know a lot about that place. So
how did you come affiliated with this place though, the old Irish pub?
So after that period of playing and Grunaluka and all this, I reached a part of my age in my mid-20s where I was sick of commercial music. After all that trying and all that. I went to, I actually thought, you know what, I'm going to have commercial gigs for privates or Julebur, make the real money. But I'm really going to chase playing deep house and house music,
techno,
afro, this type of what I liked, or old school hip hop because I hated the new hip hop.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was only interested in 90s hip hop, and that was impossible. So therefore, I just stuck to house. So as I always went to Greece in the summers to do that. Going back in Norway, I started focusing on that more. I tried to play more in underground clubs and all these places. And I got some of them, but the money was shit. And I still tried it though. I still tried my best, and I would still play in a commercial club every once in a while to fill up the pocket. I even went in competitions and all that stuff. That's another story.
It's another story. Fuck, this is the DJ podcast.
I went to a DJ competition. It was like an online competition, and I came out first.
Oh yeah.
Online. It was to play in Nox.
Cool.
Yeah. It was like an Ibiza thing, but of course, when I went there, of course, they didn't even know who the hell I was. Again, and they decided to change the rules.
Of course.
When I was first. And so they picked a winner they wanted as well.
Oh, yeah.
That was in a competition. And that's how I met one of my best friends in Norway, Alina.
Ah, I see Alina Engström.
So then she was the winner as well, and from them. So, and that's how I started getting a circle. I would say meeting other DJs for once without interests. You know, because you know a lot of times you will meet some DJs, but it was only because they want to get a gig or, you know, it was a lot of fake.
Yeah, they wanted something from you.
So I was a bit staying away from all of this.
Yeah,
I wasn't very social. So I meet Lena and I meet another friend of mine, Farhad. He was in the competition as well.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, he was a second on that thing. So cool. We all played there together and we became friends.
Oh, nice.
And from there, I feel like I got more info. Where to play, all these things. I got to meet other DJs, especially from my friend Lena. But from Farhad, I met other stuff like underground stuff, that I like.
Yeah.
So it was that good combo. And then from there, because I played there, I applied to play in Klimt in Lillestrøm. And they saw I played in Nox. I did play in Martins.
Yeah.
But the manager who was there is Mandite, so when he quit from there, I couldn't play there anymore. So I played there for almost a year in Martin's.
But it was Daniel who booked Klimt, right?
Klimt, it was Tommy.
Tommy, yeah.
Tommy Vinanger. He gave me the opportunity to play in Klimt.
Cool.
And he was very open with music because he was a DJ himself.
Yeah.
So he was like, you know, as long as it works, you do it, you know? He had full trust in me, and that's how I got, I would say, a good gig. Good gigs. And he will book me 2-3 times a month.
Know what Klimt is now?
Yeah, I don't. It's a...
It's a McDonald's.
What? Really?
Yeah. Opened like a couple of weeks ago.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That place used to be very popular.
Yeah. It used to be a few hours
ago. Very popular, especially in the Beef Fest parties.
Yeah, it was fucking crazy.
Crazy there. All right.
No, now it's McDonald's, mate.
Oh my God. Well, it probably makes way more money. That's sad.
I know.
I got really sad now. No, I really like that place. And from there again, from playing there, because I did live nearby. I lived in Shetland for a while.
You lived in Shetland?
Yeah, because of my ex.
Yeah.
So we lived.
Of course, yeah.
So I knew kind of the areas. Because I was a chef, I knew some people who come from there. So, you know, I had like I would say I had supporters and they would come over. And we were all younger too, you know, so it was different then. So from there, I was getting offers from other clubs. People would come over, they'd give me their cards and all this. And that's how I started playing in other places, apart from Lillestrøm, you know. So then I played more in Oslo. And then I discovered a place in Asker. Lancelot, you know that?
Yeah, Lancelot in Asker, yeah.
Yeah, there I became a resident DJ for 3 years.
Yeah.
So, and I was doing the bookings and everything.
Nice.
And they gave me an opportunity to open up a restaurant. Because they basically had the whole side of the building and they wanted to open a burger bar. And because I had that knowledge how to do that, I put my own menu there.
Okay.
And everything. Name, all of it.
Great.
Me and another English guy, we did it all together.
Cool.
All the recipes and everything. And at the same time, I was also DJing and doing the bookings for their clubs.
Nice.
Two places.
Quite cool.
So Yeah, and it was at a good time. I feel that was a time when I was humble and I understood everything.
But you were grinding like a motherfucker, though.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I broke up with my ex after that time, and I focused a lot at work.
Yeah. Who can imagine?
Yeah. I focused full on. I was just living at work, but that was good. And I feel like then I had the perfect balance. You know, I would never go and play underground techno and all that shit.
But then they wore yourself well. Out, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And it was good. It was good. But always deep inside of me, I always wanted to return to Greece. Even though I was going very well, I felt that time I was going very well in Norway. I always had this urge to go back to Greece. Every time I went to Greece, for some reason, every time I went back there, it was either worse or my mom left. She went to America. You know, it was always like. So in 2018, I decided to just go back to Greece, like for good. I sold everything. I gave all my stuff away.
2018.
Yeah. I gave everything away and I went to Greece and I just wanted to, you know, do life the way I want to. And some incident happened. This is a very personal, but I had to return in 2018 in the winter.
Okay.
Like the end, it was like November or December I came back and I returned and I did some gigs. And I realized how much easier life is when you're just doing gigs rather than being a manager in a restaurant and booker and all this stuff. I was like, wait a minute, maybe I don't have to move from Norway. Because one of the reasons I moved from Norway to Greece, it was also the stress. I had too much stress. So I was like, you know what? I'll just come back to Norway for 5-6 months and just try out just the DJ life. Just, you know.
Yeah.
And instead of renting a whole fucking apartment for 15,000 kroner alone, I'll rent a room and live with flatmates. You know, I'll do that thing. And it was the most stress-free and one of the best times I had.
Was that when you started working with the Old Irish Pub in 2019?
I started in 2019. So yeah, towards the end, before I go back to Greece, because I always wanted to go back to Greece for 5 months. That's what I did. 5 months in Greece, 7 months in Norway. Right before I'm about to go back to Greece, I see a post from Rasmus, the old manager of a
booking manager,
yeah. And he needed a DJ to play in Old Irish Pub at Klingeberg. And I'm like, all right, you know, I'm leaving next week. Hey, I could try out. I had experience on that type of music because I played in Hard Rock Cafe that time. And I also played in Cafe Amsterdam.
I see, yeah, yeah.
So sure. I played in those places. I felt like that I could totally try out the Klingeberg. And I go there and I meet Cecilia that back then. And they were just all nice to me, the managers. And I had a very good gig, a good weekend. And I had a very positive energy. And I really liked that I could play old music. I love playing disco. Yeah. That is my favorite thing, to play disco 80s.
Yeah, and
the old retro stuff. But, you know, it is the mother, you know, of house music.
Of course,
and all that. So I can combine some of the tracks I really love from house or R&B and whatever, and I can put it in there.
Mm.
So I like doing that. And so I go back to Greece and I get a message from Rasmus. And he's like, so when are you coming back? And I'm like, I don't know.
Oh, fuck the motherfucker.
I'm like, I don't know. You know, I was planning maybe to come some point next winter, but, you know, I don't know yet, you know, because I was living in Greece, DJing there, playing at my mom's club, even though it was rented to another guy. He was hiring me on Fridays to DJ there.
Sure.
I was getting a very good salary from there. I was DJing in a very awesome beach bar on Sundays. And I played in one of the most popular nightclubs place, it was called Jaguar, and there I could play tech and techno and, you know, all that kinky stuff that I love doing. And I would do that on a Tuesday. And I had so many nights booked, and I had a very nice life, I would say. But I'm like, you know what? I could come by maybe October, November. He's like, if you come over, I'm going to give you bookings for the next 6 months. So that never happened to me in my life before. And someone to just offer you 6 months ahead, gigs guaranteed in Norway. I was like, what the fuck? All right, let's do it. You know, I really like their energy. And I come back and everything goes well. And DJing and everything's, I would feel that was the prime. Because even that time, I remember when I went to America to visit my family, like I was even offered to play in New York.
Oh, cool.
It was really kicking. I think it was also because the disco was, it returned.
Yeah, I like a resurgence.
And I have a certain style, so I feel, I guess they thought, all right, this is the perfect guy. He's got glitter jacket, shades, all that stuff.
Yeah, and we have to talk about that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then up until the pandemic, everything was good. I was playing full on. And
But still, during the pandemic, it was quite a good thing to be a part of the roster of the old Irish DJs because you got your money. Everything was like
this. Yeah, they took care of, and even though I wasn't working here anymore, when they opened up and it was like sitting down gigs, whatever, they right away contacted me. We talked and then I played here on the sitting down gigs. They treated me very good. I feel like they treated me even better than they should. Like I didn't even know them that well, but I was treated very well. And that's what made me be more loyal.
A lot of people are like scared of the old Irish because of they have this retro concept. And that could be a real limitation to DJ.
Yeah.
It could be like a creative space that you and me see it as a room. You have to be creative in this room.
Yes.
And that's not limiting. That's only making your focus be even more laser focused, for me at least.
Yeah.
Because then you have to do the digging. And you have to find the songs that push your buttons in between. And you have to like play the songs in the way you want to play them or need to play them to push your own buttons. And I think that's underrated because a lot of people want to play the house. They want to play.
Yeah, they want to go crazy. You know?
Or they want to play the EDM and stuff because it's easy to mix.
Yes.
And it's all the same energy and it's only in the same BPM range. And it's all about the beat mixing and stuff.
I think it's also because everyone wants to be in an ultra festival in Miami, you know?
On the
I never had that crazy interest. Me, I just wanted to DJ. I just wanted to play. I was happy if I just played in the basement, as long as we're all having fun there. It was okay with me.
Yeah.
I never had this
urge.
I didn't want to be a famous superstar type of thing. I always knew to be there, a famous superstar, you have to start producing. You have to start making music. You have to be something else. You know, you can't just DJ. No one gets there just DJing anymore. Maybe back in the 90s, it was more like that, but not now.
Not at all. I totally agree. And now we're the booker for Norway, and it was like ace-nine pubs in Norway, is it?
So it's Kristiansand, Stavanger, Bergen, Moss, Skien, Drammen, Klingerberg, Majestuen.
So eight then.
Eight. I think it's eight. I'm not missing one out. So far, it's eight.
I have something cooking.
So far.
Something cooking. And the old Irish pub is a Danish-owned chain, and they have 46 or 47 pubs in Europe.
Yeah, it's expanding like crazy.
Germany, Barcelona, Netherlands.
Yeah.
Finland,
Belgium,
Finland.
Yeah.
And of course, Denmark.
Yeah.
And before the pandemic, the main one in Copenhagen, the first one, I think, didn't have a lock on the door. It was open 24 hours a day. So it's like...
Nice.
now they're closed from 6 to 9. But a lot of people ask me like, because the club payment in Norway has been like stalling for years. And of course, since the Danish guys are quite hardcore to deal with when it comes to business. I think if you come flying in on like a banana shield and think that they're going to be a super rock star, you will get humbled real quick in this place because you're part of a bigger system.
Yeah.
So that's why it gets a bad rap as well, because a lot of people come unprepared because they think they're God's gift to music and DJing.
This is like how I was when I was 17.
And the same thing happened to me in Trondheim when I went to ski, like the ski championship, because when I do après-ski stuff or after-ski stuff, I've done so much of it that I have it in my backbone. Mm. But when I come to Trondheim, it's a different kind of after-ski. I had to like make it much more Trondrefied, let's say like that, much more. So I had to like dig real deep that one night to like get the songs I needed to play because I was playing 10 days straight
at the
same place with a similar crowd. And that's a lot of work. And if you don't want to put in that work, you would not function in the room like this because you can't lean that heavy on EDM main stage remixes of stuff.
Exactly.
You have to be close to the originals, and you have
this
to
is
like,
the thing. People have to remember it's work. DJing is work.
Yeah.
People look down to it. Everyone thinks we're just having fun. It's a lot of work. If you want to play, like I've been in the business for 23 years. To be 23 years in this, you have to work. You have to be humble. You have to really push. If you're playing just EDM or being lazy or, you know, just playing your thing, I've done that mistake when I was young.
Yeah.
You don't make it. You will end up, you know, washing dishes. That's what happens. You know, that's no one wants to put up with that shit, especially today.
You'll be the one idiot talking shit about the young ones on
online. I am sometimes that guy.
Yeah.
But I always, when I meet young DJs, I tell them exactly what not to do. I tell them my mistakes. I tell them what I did as a mistake. And I tell them, you should try to do that. And I always try to remind people is take your egos away. That's the
check your
way.
Ego out the door
yeah,
and say,
it's
yeah.
the only way. You have to take that ego out. And that helps. You know, because at the end of the day, no one gives a shit, man.
No.
No one cares, man. They just want to go party, have a good time. Yeah. They don't care who the hell you are, man. You know, but if you're doing a very good party, don't start paying attention to who you are. So
absolutely.
You earn it.
You earn it,
earn it. So.
And be nice to people.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way again. Because I used to be a dick when I was young. And there was this DJ that I met in Greece. And he always got really good gigs. Really good, like big venues. But he was shit. He was not that good. Like mixing style, I was like, what the fuck is this? And I asked him, I'm like, how do you do it? He's like, be nice. I'm like, what? Be nice? He's like, be nice, you know? Present yourself nice. Listen, even if you don't agree. Just nod. Just listen. And be nice.
Mm.
After a gig, do whatever you want. Just be nice that moment. You know? Just remember it's a job and, you know.
Yeah.
To respect more, you know, it's all that.
And at one point, you have to like demand the respect back to not lose your own self-respect, of course. But then probably you think I didn't understand it
right away because I was too young then. But I took that advice well. And I tried my best in time. And then I realized, yes, this is working big time.
Absolutely. Let's just speak about your character, the player guy. Yeah. Because for people who haven't seen you, I can go watch your Instagram. It's like player.e, right?
Just player. I just put it .e because there's so many players on Instagram.
Yeah, so many players on Instagram. Yeah. So you have the flashy jacket. You have it looks like a disco ball jacket.
Yeah.
And of course, it's open.
Yeah.
You even had those fucking laser gloves at one point.
Yeah.
And you have the stupid hat.
Yeah.
Is this a costume you put on because you really want to play the music and stand in the back of the corner with no lights on you?
No. This started from when I was a dancer. When I was a podium dancer and all that, I would wear hats and dance, basically. I had a six-pack then, so I could dance half naked.
Now we have a whole case.
Yeah, now that's not the case.
But you have a whole case of
But the thing is, when I was doing this, it was not to be sexy, though. It was also to be funny. To me, it was more important to be funny in a gig. Mm. So I would like to do something stupid or crazy or wear some weird hat, especially when I was behind the booth. Of course, you know, when you're young, you want to be a bit unique, you know, but everyone just got used to me with it. Like shades, I don't think anyone remembers me without shades after 15. Like in the clubs, I used to always wear shades. When I was young, when I was in the booth, all that, I was wearing shades. Even though people were telling me, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you wearing shades? You know, the older guys, I didn't care. I'm going to wear shades. This is what I'm going to do. Even though I was blind, I wore shades. I look like Pitbull way before he was even popular.
No, blind people usually wear shades, though.
Yeah. Yeah. That was you know what? Actually, one time a chick got mad at me because I didn't wave back at her because I had the shades on and I managed to hook up with her because she thought I was like being Mr. You know, Hotshot, but it was because I was blind.
Didn't see her.
Yeah, I was fucking blind. So it's pretty funny.
Fuck me.
But yeah, the whole costume thing, it was… I did it just to have fun. And
But there must be days where like, fuck, I'm going to dress up today again.
So. I've liked my moments. Like on a Thursday when I come and play here. Yeah. Like even now, I come normal. Yeah. I only put the shades on if it's like a big party. You know, it's not… Yeah. But yeah, back in the day it was different. I would wear all my earrings, my shades. I felt naked without it.
Yeah.
But it's mostly for the show. In my normal life, I don't wear this stuff. I don't walk around with a disco jacket.
No.
And like I said, I did to be funny as well. Especially now I feel it's even funnier because I'm older. I got the belly. Disgusting, you know. I'm just, you know, shades. You know, if I didn't have a girlfriend, I would totally leave a mustache. I would totally do that. But because I have a girlfriend, I know she won't like that.
I saw you because I was doing the research. It was fucking horrible, by the way. You have no presence at all online. The main research I got from your introduction when you started booking for the Old Irish Pub in the group chat.
That's where
I find some fucking stuff about you. But of course, then I know you from before. And I was watching back some of the clips you did on Facebook Live during the pandemic with a mustache.
Complete
pedophile.
Yeah, I did it for fun. That was when I was playing with my friend Lena. She was doing she basically convinced me to come over and do, because I was so depressed then, because all the clubs shut down.
Yeah.
That minute to me, it was, you know, life is over. You know, if I'm DJing, that's it. What the fuck am I doing? And she's like, dude, come over to my house. We're going to do a live stream. And we're going to have fun. So I just fucking shaved because, you know, I didn't even shave, you know.
I was with a beard and
everything. And I just let a mustache. Yeah.
I was at one point saving to get to like a mullet. To have like the bald spot in a mullet. Looked like Hulk Hogan in his prime. But it was itching so back in,
in the back of the neck.
So yeah. Let's ask one last question. The lollipops and the candy. I find the receipt ones.
Yeah.
You buy lollipops for over 400 kronor.
Crazy guy.
And you'd hand them out to the people in the front row?
So that started, the lollipop thing started, remember when there was a shooting in Oslo a couple years ago at the gay... It was at the gay pride times. There was a lot of people who were even scared to go out, I remember, with the gay... there was demonstrations.
I was in the demonstrations with them, actually.
Believe it or not, everyone thinks I'm not into them, but yeah, I was with them. And in the night, there was a manager here, Anton. He was gay. And he had the lollipops. And I'm like, oh, this is a good idea, you know. And I started giving it to people while playing. I think I was playing I Will Survive. I played that one.
Yeah, like a huge gay album.
I put in the rainbow colors and all that. And people loved it. People were so happy. And I was like, you know what? And because... a lot of the staff was calling me daddy. Because of him and that, they were calling me daddy.
Yeah.
I think because I'm older and I also had a puppy then. So I was daddy all of a sudden, from player to daddy. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it again.
That's a heartful.
Lollipops.
Player to daddy.
Yeah. I got the lollipops and I will play daddy cool.
Of course. Yeah.
And and since then, I've been doing that. You know,
cool.
I keep a tradition now, you know.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not into the confetti stuff. I'm more into the lollipop.
And you called me at one point. I remember the professor because I do a lot of crate digging. So I play. I play a lot of radio hits that you guys that only have background from the clubs.
Yeah.
Don't know that much. So I'm the show off, and you're the fucking professor. You're talking.
Yeah.
I
feel it's nice that each DJ has their own little thing. You know, like
absolutely,
your own,
absolutely,
style and you know.
But you have to have something in your backbone. You have to, at least this is a huge room for people listening, maybe some small place in the west of Norway or whatever. Like some of the old Irish pubs are huge rooms. Like this one has, in Majorstua has a capacity of just shy of 800. And the one in
Stavanger, it's over 1,000. Right?
Yeah, and the one in Bergen is 1,300. One of the biggest ones in Norway.
Huge,
so.
Huge.
And when you do the big rooms, it's so easy to only focus on the people just in front of you.
Yeah.
But then again, it's more difficult to do the big room because if you lose the energy of the room,
you will lose the crowd. You got to be on point.
Yeah.
No messing around.
So, yeah, totally. Okay, I have a new segment. You're the first one doing this segment. Mm. It's called the Borrow Questions.
The Borrow Questions?
Yes. So you will get four questions.
Okay.
So four beats in a bar, you know.
Okay, the bar question. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Borrow questions. So all four beats in a bar. And I have 16 questions to choose from because 16 equals a phrase.
Okay.
Four bars, yeah. I'm a fucking geek. I know. So I have this dice machine here. So I will randomly choose.
Yeah.
Out of the 16.
Uh-huh.
And you got number 7.
I like that number.
Yeah, lucky number 7.
Yeah.
What is your best ever DJ related buy? If you buy something like a mixer or a headphone or whatever related to DJing.
The most like memorable is when I was fine making good money, enough money, and I bought my own the DJ SZ, Pioneer SZ. It was a MIDI player, that big one, in 2015.
Yeah,
it's when I transitioned from CDs to laptop that time. I couldn't afford to have Nexus, so I couldn't use just USBs, and I got the SZ Pioneer. I had that baby up until last year.
Yeah, nice.
I didn't use it. I just had it. I sold it finally.
The Pioneer X SX. I had a Serato controller.
Yeah,
and had two of those for like 10 years, maybe.
That was brilliant. I feel like every MIDI player copied these.
Controller. Absolutely. Okay, let's see. Another one. Number 1. What's the most memorable gig you ever played?
I feel like in 2009 or 2010, even though I had so many, I feel that one, I really liked that one because it was for my family's nightclub. My sister was working it that summer. And even though I was working in another club, after there, I had to go to my sister's club.
Oh.
And she will open at 4 in the morning. So I will finish for the
morning club.
Yeah, she will be open till 9 in the morning. And it was after
4
hour.
Till 9? Yeah. Jesus.
And I went to help her there, and I went to DJ that time. And because it was after hour, I could play more of my music, which was hard back then.
Yeah, hard and dark.
And I played like nice house tech type, you know, and it wasn't really in back then, that music. Oh. Or it wasn't commercial at all back then. Because Deep House became big after 2011 and all that. But I did that in 2009. I think it was 2010. Sorry, it was 2010.
Yeah,
that was the year. I just locked in. I just really enjoyed that gig. I really enjoyed that one.
Cool.
So,
next one. Question number 3 is, who is your biggest musical influence?
Oof. What, like a DJ or like a musician? Or
could be whatever.
Nah.
Let's do both.
Okay, like a group that really changed my way of music and all that was actually Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang Clan.
I love Wu-Tang. Yeah. And I think because Wu-Tang used a lot of these samples from the discos and all that, Wu-Tang. Yeah. I grew up with Wu-Tang. I really liked it. And they weren't commercial, Wu-Tang.
Oh.
I remember I would tell people in the 90s as a kid, you know, Wu-Tang, they didn't know who the hell that was. They knew Backstreet Boys, you know.
Yeah, but they had the album successes, though. Sold a lot of albums because they had like…
My
singles.
My favorite one was 36 Chambers, the first one, 93. I think it was because they were cussing. They were saying fuck and all that shit. Yeah. So I was like, yeah! I was like 8. So, he said, fuck, bitch. You know, so I like it.
if you're a girl and listening to this podcast, you're so fucking lucky.
Yeah.
If you're born a guy, you're a complete idiot from the get-go. Yeah.
Well, I would say DJ Roger Sanchez.
Oh, God.
Roger Sanchez was one of my favorite DJs. And, of course, Miss Kitten that I mentioned before.
Yeah, yeah.
Miss Kitten, I really liked her style because she would put like retro electronic disco, in Italo disco with a techno track. She did that. And I was like, what, 16 when I heard this, her set? Ooh. And I was like, oh my God, you know? This is
something.
Roger Sanchez, I really liked his style. He is mixing and
cool guy.
He will put the break beats in the house.
Absolutely, has his own
flavor. Because as a dancer too, you know, I go with the music I like. I love break dance. I love the break beats with the house. I love that combination.
Yeah.
The electro type of thing.
And his own hits, like some of them are so polished, but still.
Another Chance.
Yeah, fucking awesome song. One of the best. And the music video is good as well.
With the heart.
Great. All right. Last one. Number 13.
Oh, dear.
If you could share the bill with any DJ in the world, who would you choose?
Share the bill?
Yeah, be like on the same poster, like doing the warm-up then, basically, I guess.
I think that would be Roger Sanchez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would totally like to. I feel like that's a type of DJ I would love to meet.
Cool.
I did see him live. I touched his hand when I was
a kid. I touched his hand.
Yeah.
So cute.
gave him like a high five. It was so cool.
Look at me.
Maybe he gave me powers back then. Then I could fucking play proper after that.
Sanchez step or whatever.
That was in 2009.
Where was that?
I was here in Norway.
Nope.
Do you remember Club Lux?
Lux, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He played there.
Yeah.
I went there all alone because the ex that I was at that time, she wanted to go to a strip club.
Of course she
was. I wanted to go fucking clubbing and watch with Roger Sanchez. And I went and saw Sanchez.
I went to see...
We broke up months later, so...
Yeah. I went to see Axwell. He was playing at...
Oh, wow.
What the fuck was that club called? Stravinsky.
Stravinsky, that was a big club.
This was just after he came out with I Found You. And that song was so fucking awesome. And I had this friend with me who was working who was driving an ambulance. He was an ambulance worker. And he didn't go out that much. And there was some celebrities in the house and they got mental. So he was buying a big, what's it called? Brett?
Mm-hmm.
What's
Brett,
it called?
Brett.
Yes, when you have drinks on something.
Oh, yeah.
A tray.
Tray.
Fuck, we had the same.
Yeah, you said that word. Yeah.
Like a couple of years ago. I can't remember
tray. So it's called Brett in Norwegian?
It's Brett, yes. Serveringsbrett. We have tray. He bought this big tray of vodka Red Bulls and he was going to serve them over like a counter or something. And then he flipped it over. It was like 10 vodka Red Bulls. Just
oh, my God.
All over the table.
Holy shit.
And then we got into trouble with some guys in the kebab queue. So that was a great night. Thank you.
Holy shit.
A lot of shit happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's scary. I remember because that was just before the creation of the Swedish House Mafia in Ultra.
Yeah.
It's like
They did have some hits individually.
Yeah, right absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
What was that one track? The Tell Me Why.
Yeah, Supermode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just two of the guys together, yeah.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah.
Tell Me Why. That was at 2006 or 2007.
Yeah, something other.
See, that was the thing. I had that interest of that music, the electro.
That's
progressive.
Axwell had a lot of hits, actually.
Yeah. Genius. Very genius.
Brilliant. Brilliant. All right. I think we're going to wrap up.
All righty.
Yeah.
It was a great experience.
Yeah. Thank you.
Never did
thank this. You. Have a good one.
Thank you. And you too. Happy birthday for yesterday.
Yeah, you will be happy having your birthday tomorrow.
Today, it's Greek National Day.
Is it?
So you had gyros on the Greek National
Day.
Oh,
wow.
There you go.
I can kill myself after this. I have to publish the podcast first.
All righty.
Du har hørt Platekusk, podcasten om norske DJs.